Welcome to episode 158 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for June the 4th, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, far too many issues between motorists and cyclists, and LAPD officers are relieved of duty following a critical mass incident. Ivan Basso wins the Giro d'Italia. Alejandro Valverde is banned from the sport. And we're getting ready for the Dauphiné, the Tour de Suisse, and yes, the Tour de France. Plus, BlackBerry users are getting cycling directions in Google Maps and bike helmets that stink when they need replacement. Following the news, an interview with Dan Austin from 88bikes.org, an interview with Tyler Servas from the Rockwell Relay, and a product review from Carlton Reed. Sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and hang on, it's going to be a long ride tonight, but I've got a lot of news and a lot of stuff to talk to you about. But first, I want to remind you that this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Keen Footwear. You know, over the last few weeks, we've been talking about a lot of products from Keen. We've talked about the Austin Pedal. We've talked about the Coronado Cruiser. We've talked about the Messenger Bag. We've talked about their socks. But tonight, I just want to talk to you about Keen as a brand and as a lifestyle, because we've talked before about Keen and their philosophy of the hybrid life. Simply stated, the hybrid life is embodied in these three words: create, play, and care. And that really is a way of life for the folks at Keen. And one of the ways that they care is through an endeavor that they call hybrid care. One community, one environment, one conscience. And since 2004, Keen has given out more than $5 million to a variety of nonprofit organizations, including Leave No Trace, the Forest Park Conservancy, the Conservation Alliance, the Outdoor Industry Foundation, the Youth Outdoors Legacy Fund, and 88 Bikes. And you will have a chance to hear from Dan Austin, one of the founders of 88 Bikes, later in the show. As I mentioned to you, Keen believes that through their products, their customers, you and I, can have better access to the outdoors. And to Keen, the outdoors is anywhere where there isn't a roof, whether that's at the beach, in the mountains, or just walking in a major city somewhere in the world. Through your Keens, you will be able to experience the outdoors much more easily and comfortably. And through your purchase of Keens, you will be able to help support some very important organizations, just like 88 Bikes. And you'll hear more about that later on in the show. In the meantime, to learn more about Keen, their products, and their causes, go to www.thefredcast.com and click on the Keen banners. We thank Keen so much for supporting the Fredcast and so many worthy causes. And we thank you for supporting Keen. And now, let's get to the news. Our first story, once again, is a sad one. And I know I've talked about this time after time on the show. I go through thousands of news stories every week as I prepare for the Fredcast. And the sheer number of stories that talk about cyclists who are hit and killed on the roadways is literally mind-boggling. Thankfully, I haven't yet become a nerd to it. My mind isn't numbed to the number of accidents and injuries that I read about. Instead, it just motivates me more to be more of an advocate and an activist for cyclist rights, and also to continue to ask and plead for you to be good cycling citizens out there on the road. These stories, however, have nothing to do with the cyclists involved having been bad cycling citizens. It has to do simply with bad motorists and motorists who, through inattention, simply brought about tragedy and misery to a lot of people. just a few short days ago, a number of cyclists in Quebec in Canada were killed on the roadway. An example, a pickup truck that ran into a group of six cyclists on Highway 112 in Rougemont in the Montreuil region of Quebec caused the deaths of three cyclists. A short time later, six additional cyclists, including three who were aged 20 to 23, also died following collisions on roads and highways across that Canadian province. The coroner investigating the Rougemont accident said that the pickup truck, which was driven by a 29-year-old volunteer firefighter who, I understand, was just coming off a lengthy shift, when he rear-ended that group of cyclists. Apparently, the coroner saying that that vehicle may have been on cruise control at the time of the accident and that that alone may have contributed to the accident itself. According to the coroner, quote, it has to be asked whether the use of cruise control diminished the concentration of the driver. We know there's a zone along the highway where photo radar has been installed, and people have a tendency to use cruise control not to exceed the speed limit. According to the coroner, the driver of the truck was in his lane, traveling in a straight line at normal speed, but it seems he, quote, just didn't see the cyclists in front of him. There was no sudden maneuver, no excessive speed, no alcohol involved. And I guess this just points out something that we keep hearing from people time and time again. For some reason, cyclists, to some people, are simply invisible out there on the road. How many times has it happened to you when you are going down a straight road, bright light, excellent road conditions, and somebody who you can clearly see from blocks away pulls out of a driveway right in front of you as if you simply weren't there? So what can come of these accidents other than tragedy and misery? Well, in Montreal alone, 734 collisions were reported last year between vehicles and cyclists. Last year, resulting in three deaths and 41 cases of severe injuries. With so many cyclists dying in such a short period of time, it is hoped by many that this may bring about greater awareness for cyclists and cyclist rights, and that hopefully it will get the attention of government and regulators in Canada to take some action and bring about a safer environment for cyclists on the road. In the meantime, my thoughts and prayers go out to the cyclists and their families. We know that there is very little in a case like this that can bring about some immediate solace. But if it means in the long term, safer roads in Quebec for all cyclists, well, then at least their deaths won't have been in vain. Meanwhile, a bit farther south in Leonardtown, Maryland, the Patuxent Velo Cycling Club's Leonardtown Criterium was held on Sunday, May 16th, and now the St. Mary's County Sheriff's Office is investigating numerous destruction of property charges which occurred during the Criterium when some unknown malicious person threw tacks along the race course, causing riders to suffer flats and crash, some of them in groups. And there is a link to a video on the website from a helmet cam that shot one of these crashes as it occurred. Numerous cyclists were injured as a result, and one suffered a broken bone. According to Detective Cindy Allen, the public information officer for the St. Mary's County Sheriff's Office, there are potentially additional charges that may be brought in addition to the destruction of property charges once these individuals are found. The charges could include assault, reckless endangerment, and other charges as well. Anyone with information is urged to contact Corporal M. Smolarski at 301-475-4200, extension 1960, or Crime Solvers at area code 301-475-3333. According to Hans Welch, a member of the Patuxent Velo Bike Club, quote, "It was a shock to us. We worked really hard to put on the event here." Also, according to the bike club, the course was cleared several times with leaf blowers, brooms, and other devices to ensure that the roads were clear, leading everyone involved to be quite certain that this was no accident, but the intentional act of a potentially deranged individual. Hopefully this person will be caught and prosecuted soon. Had enough yet? Wait, there's more. On May 31st, at about 11 a.m., police were dispatched to the Florida State Kent campus in reference to a stabbing. According to witnesses, a driver of a pickup truck was pulling into a parking lot and was going at an excessive rate of speed. The pickup truck's mirror brushed against a cyclist. The pickup truck driver was then yelled at by victims to slow down. He stopped his vehicle. He got out. He started yelling and was extremely, quote, irate. When someone walked up to help break up the argument, the suspect started yelling and pushing that person and said, quote, "I'm not leaving until someone starts something." He then began chest bumping and pushing a rider, and another bike rider came over after the initial rider had been pushed and punched the driver in the face, and it was at that point when he felt a sharp pain. The cyclist was stabbed 6 times, once in the stomach and 5 times in his back, and another victim sustained lacerations on his arms while trying to help. The suspect then got in his vehicle and fled the scene. Thankfully, in a later follow-up story, the driver, Matt Roger Sammons, age 25, was arrested by police and charged with 2 counts of aggravated battery and 1 count of simple battery following that confrontation. According to police records, Sammons has been cited twice each with careless driving, running a stop sign, and speeding among 14 driving violations in the past 8 years in the Jacksonville, Florida area. Finally, someone gets arrested. By the way, following the arrest of Sammons, he was quoted in the police report as follows. He said that he thought he hit a bicyclist as he was trying to drive through a large crowd of cyclists. He said that he followed them into the parking lot to check on them, and then he got into an argument with several people in the group and said, "F all of you, come on," when he was punched in the face. He then said, quote, "I got my pocket knife and went to town." Well, now he's gone to jail. And if that weren't enough, how about the story of the San Francisco hit-and-run driver who ran over 4 cyclists and ran into cars late Wednesday night in San Francisco? All of this happening just before 10 p.m. in 4 locations in the Mission District and Potrero Hill. According to police, the driver was targeting people on bikes, and the rampage ended when the driver crashed his car at 17th and Missouri Street and then took off running. Story gets better. Later, a gentleman showed up at the police station in Albany, California, claiming his Nissan Rogue had been carjacked and hoping to claim the car that was used in the hit and runs against these cars and against the cyclists. Police, not being dummies, promptly arrested the man. And while the police in Northern California are praised for their arrest of the man in the hit-and-run incident in San Francisco, meanwhile, 4 police officers in Southern California have been relieved of field duty following their clash with cyclists in critical mass in Hollywood last month. Take a look at the video that's linked in the show notes for this week's show, and you will see that a number of officers are standing by the side of the road, kind of reminiscent to what we saw in the Times Square incident last year, when all of a sudden one of them seems to just, for no apparent reason, kick and cause a cyclist to hit the ground. All of this being caught on video, the man watching the video yelling, well, an obscenity and asking why exactly they did that. He was promptly wrestled to the ground. And then you can hear the police yelling, "Get up, get down, get up, get down, giving conflicting information to the cameraman, still wondering why he was tackled. As a result of this, the four officers have been relieved of field duty pending a full investigation. While many of us here in the United States, and certainly here on the Fredcast, seemed overly interested in the Amgen tour of California over the last several weeks, there was a little race going on in Italy, one of the grand tours, the Giro d'Italia. This year's Giro d'Italia won for the second time by Ivan Basso of Italy and Team Liquigas in 87 hours, 44 minutes, and 1 second. And I think that extra 1 second was when he slowed down just a little bit on the last stage, coming over the line to plaster a huge grin on his face as he came across the line, the winner of this year's 2010 Giro d'Italia. And from there, he headed into Verona's Roman Amphitheater, where there were thousands of cheering fans waiting to see their Italian champion ride into the stadium, into the arms of his kids, something that we were watching live on TV as he embraced his kids, obviously a bit sweaty from the closing time trial, and then as he let his young son go, his young son wiping the sweat from his dad off of him. Second place going to David Arroyo from Spain and Castaparna. He was 1 minute 51 seconds behind Ivan. Third place going to Vincenzo Nibali from Italy, Ivan's Liquigas teammate, 2 minutes and 37 seconds back. Fourth place went to Michele Scarponi from Italy, 2 minutes and 50 seconds back. And fifth, the world champion Cadel Evans from Australia and Team BMC, 3 minutes 27 seconds back. Cadel Evans had an amazing Giro. Everybody saying that he was definitely honoring the rainbow stripes of his world championship jersey. And of course, another thing that people were saying was that while this is officially Ivan Basso's second victory in the Giro d'Italia, many people saying that they feel that it is a victory with an asterisk because, of course, Ivan Basso was banned for 2 years from professional cycling back in 2007 for his involvement in the Operation Puerto doping scandal from Spain. Now, Ivan Basso said that he had not actually taken performance-enhancing drugs, but that he had intended to do so and therefore acknowledged that he should have received that suspension. Many observers felt that the 2010 edition of the Giro d'Italia was perhaps one of the best multi-week stage races we have seen in a very long time. A couple of reasons people feel that way. Number one, perhaps because of the split in the professional peloton, with some choosing to go to California and some choosing to go to Italy. Others believe that the reason why this was such a competitive event is because perhaps the sport has finally cleaned up its act, become doping-free, and leveled the playing field. Bradley Wiggins winning the first stage, Tyler Farah winning the second. Bradley was in the pink jersey, the Maglia Rosa, for that first stage, and then world champion Cadel Evans had it after stage two. Alexander Vinokourov picking it up in stage three, then Vincenzo Nibali holding onto it for three stages. Vinokourov picking up the next four stages, then Richie Porte for three, David Arroyo for the next five, and then Ivan Basso simply ran away with the Maglia Rosa. For me, I think perhaps the two things that will stand out in my memory of the 2010 Giro d'Italia are Cadel Evans' victory in stage seven, and of course, that image of Ivan Basso hugging his kids in that Roman Colosseum in Verona. Stage 7, I think, is going to be one of those stages that people will remember and talk about for years and years to come. It was a difficult day with two Category 3 and one Category 2 climbs. It was a day that saw pavé, rain, mud, and saw a world champion ride away from some of the best cyclists in the world to come across the finish line, winning the stage of the Giro d'Italia, wiping some mud away from his rainbow stripes and pointing at those stripes to say, "Yep, folks, I'm the world champion and I just showed you why. It was a fantastic race. I hope many of you had the opportunity to view it. I know a lot of you had the chance to view it on the iPhone app that I talked to you about. Later on in the show, Carlton Reed is going to tell us about another that, at least for some of you, will allow you to watch the Tour de France in a similar way. So the Giro d'Italia 2010 is behind us. Coming up next, a multitude of some of the most famous cycling races in the world, including what is often viewed as a prelude to the Tour de France, June 6th through the 13th, the Dauphiné Libéré. Some people going there to prepare for the Tour de France, others going to Switzerland for the Tour de Suisse, June 12th through the 20th. Lance Armstrong will be racing the Tour de Suisse. He is currently doing the Tour of Luxembourg. And then, of course, when July rolls around, we all know what we're doing. July 3rd through the 25th, we're watching the Tour de France. Lots of great racing coming up. Unfortunately, two places where we will not be viewing races. Number one, Missouri. As we talked about on the last episode of the Fredcast, the Tour of Missouri and the organizers thereof have decided to cancel this summer's Tour of Missouri after state tourism officials declined to provide them with the funding that had already been earmarked to the race, declining as a result of the state's diminishing budget and the need to assign that money to other interests in the state. Another place where they are also having some financial difficulties with their race is in Ireland. The organizers of the Tour of Ireland International Cycle Race have now announced that the race will not go ahead between the 18th and the 22nd of August this year, despite the fact that they had commercial and public sector funding. They simply felt that the current economic conditions mean that an additional investment would be required to make the event viable, and unfortunately, that investment was not forthcoming. According to organizer Alan Rushton of the Tour of Ireland Cycling Events Limited, quote, "We fully intend to bring it back for 2011 when the private sector environment is stronger." Over the last several weeks, we've discussed the case of Alejandro Valverde, banned from racing in Italy after his DNA matched blood containing EPO, and it was found at a Madrid clinic in 2006. I told you that the UCI and the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport to try to make the ban global. And that's exactly what has happened. Alejandro Valverde was banned for the 2 years beginning January 1st, 2010. His prior results will stand, however. His 2010 results have now been disqualified, and he has to reimburse any prize money he has won, including his victory in the Tour de Romandie and his second place finish in Paris-Nice. Prior to this decision, Alejandro Valverde was leading the world standings in first place with Cadel Evans in second. But now, as a result of this decision, Alejandro Valverde has lost all of the points that he had accumulated this year. And now Cadel Evans is in first place in the world standings, moving up from third. Philippe Gilbert moving down one place to second. Joaquin Rodriguez moving to third from second. Luis Leon Sanchez is in fourth. Tom Bonin in fifth. Ivan Basso, coming off his Giro d'Italia victory, is in sixth. Previously, he was not in the top 10. Michele Scarpone, with his great performance in the Giro d'Italia, is in seventh. Fabian Cancellara is in eighth. Alexander Vinokourov is in ninth. And Alberto Contador moves down three places from seventh to 10th. In another doping-related story that has gotten way more attention than the Alejandro Valverde case is the case of Floyd Landis and the Landis emails. Landis admitting to his own use of performance-enhancing substances during his professional cycling career and accusing others, including Johan Bruneel, Lance Armstrong, Dave Zabriskie, George Hincapie, Levi Leipheimer, and others. As a result of those allegations, and despite protestations from Lance Armstrong and his assertion that Floyd Landis has lost all credibility, the UCI has now asked several national federations to investigate these doping-related allegations. Specifically, the UCI has, quote, requested the relevant national federations to carry out inquiries into the accusations made by Mr. Floyd Landis against their license holders, namely Cycling Australia for Matthew White, Royal Belgian Cycling League for Johan Bruneel, the Canadian Cycling Association for Michael Berry, and the French Cycling Federation for John Lalonde. According to the UCI, the allegations made by Floyd against his former U.S. Postal Service teammate Lance Armstrong are already under investigation by federal authorities. And on that point, the New York Times has now reported that U.S. federal authorities are expanding their probe so that it will include other charges, potentially other charges, against Lance Armstrong and the United States Postal Service, including fraud. The investigators are particularly interested, according to the Associated Press, in whether money from the U.S. Postal Service, which sponsored Armstrong's team for 9 years, whether that Postal Service money, public taxpayer money, was used to buy performance-enhancing drugs. Once again, according to the New York Times, the newspaper is citing two people who were briefed on the investigation. These people were granted anonymity, quote, because they did not want to jeopardize their access to delicate information. It should be noted that to date, there is no evidence that Lance Armstrong engaged in any doping or the use of any performance-enhancing drugs or practices. But meanwhile, Floyd Landis, who vehemently defended his stance that he did not use performance-enhancing drugs, who wrote a book saying exactly the same thing, and who took a lot of fans' money to help aid his defense, has now completely switched gears and admitted to his own doping. Hence the reason why Lance Armstrong and others question Floyd's credibility. We spoke at length on this subject on the most recent episode of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. For a more expanded coverage of this story, I'd point you there to www.the-spokesman.com, and that was Spokesman episode number 50. And just to put a final point on the Floyd Landis story, it should be noted that Floyd Landis and the Bahati Foundation cycling team, the team for which he was racing during the 2010 cycling season, those two have now parted ways. And then there's this story, perhaps the most surreal, bizarre, kind of doping-related story I think we've heard yet in professional cycling. Over the last days and weeks, rumors have been circulating that perhaps there are some in the professional peloton who are not using performance-enhancing drugs or not engaging in blood doping, but are using motorized doping. According to the allegations, tiny motors are being concealed within the frames of some of the bikes in the pro peloton, giving them an unfair advantage. And now a video, which includes former professional cyclist David Cassini, has arrived on the internet, and yes, there is a link in the show notes, which purports to show a bicycle with such a motor, and then shows Fabian Cancellara in some of his victories in the early stages of this year's racing season, and purports to show Cancellara activating the motor just at the point when he was able to pull away from the other competitors and win the races. As a result, the UCI has decided to investigate this so-called mechanical doping. According to UCI President Pat McQuaid, he doesn't believe the rumors sweeping the sport, saying, quote, "We have no belief at the moment that it's actually a fact." Continuing, however, he said, quote, "We want to make sure that as batteries on bikes progress, the UCI is in a position to monitor completely any usage there might be in an unfair way." Meanwhile, according to Fabian Cancellara, who was quoted responding to these allegations, he said, quote, "It's so stupid, I'm speechless. I've never had batteries on my bike." Now, many of us, when we first heard this story, thought that it was pretty hilarious and quite impossible. And I think Fabian was in the same boat, saying, quote, "It's quite funny, but it's become a bigger story and is no longer so funny. It's a sad and really outrageous story. Believe me, my feats are the result of hard work." Consular's team Saxo Bank came out with their own statement saying, in part, quote, "Team Saxo Bank rejects all insinuations and accusations that have been made in the media regarding Fabian Consular's alleged use of an electric motor in his bike. Team Saxo Bank is strongly opposed to any form of cheating, and there is absolutely no truth to this story. There was not, and never has been, a motor in any Team Saxo Bank rider's bike." The statement concludes, "Fabian's victories in Ron van Vlaanderen and Paris-Roubaix embody everything that is beautiful about our sport. Strength, endurance, suffering, passion, drama, and teamwork. Fabian's victories are the result of dedication, hard work, and sacrifice, as well as his unique ability to rise to the occasion when striving to reach his goals. We are confident that the public can see through the nonsense this myth has presented and respect Fabian for what he is, a true champion. There will be no further team comment on this situation, as we feel the insinuations do not warrant further time or energy." And so, like Team Saxo Bank, we're not going to dwell on doping any longer on this episode of the Fredcast. So instead, let's move to, well, a story that actually could affect some of you out there who are listening. Google has now added a couple of new features to its Google Maps for BlackBerry application. Specifically, and most important to Fredcast listeners, BlackBerry users can now get cycling directions from Google Maps on their BlackBerries. This portion of the app will show bike-only trails, bike lanes, and roads that are just good for cycling. And like we had the gentleman on from Google earlier this year, please use these directions with caution, as these cycling directions are still in beta. To download your app or update the one that is already on your BlackBerry, simply go to m.google.com/maps to download the new application, which is version 4.2. And yes, there are links in the show notes. Many, if not most of you, are cyclists. That's why you listen to the Fredcast. So I have a question for you. What do you think is the best nutritional strategy for you before you go out for a ride? I know that a lot of times we see people scarfing down the pasta, eating a lot of power bars or Clif bars, just trying to quote-unquote fuel up before their ride. However, new research indicates that that may not be the best strategy after all. Dr. Peter Hespel, a professor of exercise physiology at the University of Leuven in Belgium, and his colleagues have published a study in Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, the Journal of the American College of Sports Medicine, that indicates that exercising on an empty stomach may indeed be better for you, especially if you're trying to lose fat, than filling up before your next training ride. In Dr. Hespel's study, he and his colleagues tested the effects on men who did endurance training without eating versus those who ate. In the athletes who hadn't eaten, the researchers found a spike in the amount of proteins needed to process fat, meaning that their bodies had been primed through fasting to burn more fat. Dr. Hespel recommends that you do this kind of training before breakfast, since once you've eaten any carbohydrates, the process of metabolizing fat has been interrupted for about 6 hours after you've eaten. Dr. Hespel does have his critics, however. Some people say that even though you may burn fat more quickly this way, the fat that you're burning may be contained within the muscles themselves and therefore won't actually help you burn weight. According to Andrew Greenberg, the director of the Obesity and Metabolism Laboratory at Tufts University, quote, When you exercise without eating, fat is broken down more quickly in the muscle. You may enhance how you burn the fat in the muscles, but it doesn't affect your overall body fat. Another critic is Dr. Ron Mann, a professor of sport, exercise, and health sciences at Loughborough University in Britain. He says that he would recommend perhaps only training this way once per week, and that difficult ride or difficult run may train your body to burn fat, but that you still need to fuel up before your exercise sessions the rest of the week. Quote, that might help you get very good at burning fat, but you won't be very good at whatever exercise it is you're doing. Without enough fuel, you won't get the intensity of training you need to get improvements. If you'd like to learn more, I have put links in the show notes to where you can find the study in the medical journal. Please, before you engage in any form of exercise or nutrition change, consult with a doctor. I am not one, and I do not play one on TV or on the podcast. There are many opinions on the helmet debate as to whether or not wearing a helmet will or will not protect you in the case of a bicycle crash. But one thing is clear, and on this point, all of us can agree. If you are going to wear a helmet, once that helmet has been involved in a crash, it is no longer suited for the purpose for which it was intended. But here's the problem. Many of us wonder whether if we drop our helmet on our way out for our ride, whether that alone constitutes enough damage for the helmet to need replacement. Well, now scientists at, and get this name, the Fraunhofer Institute for Mechanics of Materials, IVM in Freiburg, in cooperation with the Fraunhofer Institute for Environmental Safety and Energy Technology, Umsicht in Oberhausen, have come up with a solution. They have developed polymers that will be injected into the foam materials in future bicycle helmets that, when the bicycle helmet has sustained damage that makes it no longer suitable for the purpose of protecting your head, this will cause, quote, odoriferous oils enclosed in microcapsules, unquote, to release a stinky smell. The smaller the crack, the lighter the smell. The bigger the crack, the more it smells. Insert pun here. The fact, however, is that many of us don't know whether or not our helmets require replacement and when that replacement is necessary. This is a great idea. If your head stinks, it's time for you to get a new helmet. To me, great idea for those of us who do believe that bicycle helmets can and do protect our heads in the case of a crash. The process is being perfected and finalized now, so stinky helmets should be available on your retailer shelves in the years to come. And with that stinky story, this ends the news for this episode of the Fredcast. Well, before we get to tonight's features, I want to talk to you about the sponsor of the features, and that is Jensen USA. We've been talking about Jensen USA a lot here on the show, and I've been getting great feedback from all of you Fredcast listeners who tell me that you've tried Jensen USA and they are now going to be your online retailer of choice. And a lot of you have given several reasons. Number one, selection. Two, price. And three, unparalleled customer service. And that's what Jensen USA has been telling me about their company for years, and it is great to hear it verified by Fredcast fans. Basically, what we're hearing is from those of you who have been buying from other online retailers, and thanks to hearing about Jensen USA here on the Fredcast, you gave them a try, and as a result, it seems like you are not going back, and that is great news. If you're getting better prices and better selection and better service from Jensen USA, I couldn't be happier. Now, if you haven't tried Jensen USA yet, now is a great time. Just go to www.jensenusa.com/thefredcast to get started checking out their amazing selection and magical pricing. And right now, check out the landing page for the Fredcast, jensenusa.com/thefredcast. They have a great Enjoy the Ride graphic that I just think is fantastic. So thanks to Jensen USA for the graphic. Thanks to Jensen USA for supporting the Fredcast. And thanks to you for supporting Jensen USA. First up in the features tonight is something I teased at the very start of the show. This is a gentleman by the name of Dan Austin. Dan is the founder of an organization that I've only recently become acquainted with, but to which I have already donated. And you'll hear a little bit about that in the interview. I was introduced to Dan by our sponsor, Keen Footwear. This is not an advertisement for Keen. This is an interview with somebody who's doing something very special for children, and it relates to bikes. So here's the interview I did last night with Dan Austin from 88 Bikes. Enjoy. I'm joined this evening by Dan Austin of 88bikes.org. Dan, welcome to the Fredcast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Hey, we're really glad to catch up with you. I know you had a busy weekend at Mountain Film, and we're going to talk about that. But first, give me the elevator pitch. What is 88 Bikes?
88 Bikes is a nonprofit. We give bikes to orphans and children throughout the developing world. We endow ashrams, orphanages, centers, and schools throughout the developing world with bikes for all the kids. We connect kids one-to-one, so one person sponsors one bike for one child. When we give them the bike, we also give them a picture of their sponsor. On the back there's a world map, so we can show them where they live and where their sponsor lives. And the kids love this. They love the cars almost as much as they love the bikes themselves. They become these little talismans. So the idea is connecting kids one-to-one with sponsors, getting them bikes, and then we bring in volunteers to do workshops, apprenticeships in the future to get the kids up to speed on bike repair and just help them enjoy their bikes.
Okay, why 88, though?
Well, the initial year we did this, I should say we never actually even anticipated doing a nonprofit to begin with. My brother and I were going to do a bike trip to Cambodia, and we wanted to give our bikes away at the end of the trip, and we found an orphanage, and 2 weeks before we left, we realized that there were 88 kids at the orphanage, which, of course, meant that 86 kids would feel pretty left out. So we launched a fundraiser, and within 4 days had all the money we needed to give bikes to all the kids. And so after that happened, 88 Bikes just became our brand. Plus, it's a nice number. It kind of looks like bike wheels and the eternity symbol, you know, all that stuff.
Okay, but I got to back up a second. You said you did a fundraiser in 4 days. How did that happen?
We partnered with our friend Nick, who's a social media entrepreneur in New York, and we launched a website. And just basically put out the word to all of our friends and family and everybody. And, within 4 days, people loved the idea of giving a bike to a child, and they loved the idea of connecting one-to-one with a child. And, you know, the price point was about right. $88 is a significant donation, but in most cases, it's not going to break the bank. Folks love the transparency. You know, they give $88, it goes directly to a child. It's about what a bike costs in the developing world. And, we couldn't believe it. It happened so quickly. We thought we'd be raising money right up until the moment of happy, the moment when the kids received their bikes. But no, it was done long before we even left on the trip.
Now, a lot of my listeners, I call them Freds. Freds are people who have fairly expensive equipment. They may not be the best cyclists. Sorry, everybody. They may not be the best cyclists in the world, but we have some of the best equipment. Describe an $88 bike.
Well, typically what we try to find are these rugged, steel-framed, one- or three-speed utilitarian bikes. You know, these are tanks. These are heavy bikes. These are bikes that can, handle rough conditions. They're not mountain bikes. They're not fancy bikes. They have racks on the back. They're made for difficult conditions. We partner as much as we can with bike companies in country. We always buy the bikes in country, regardless of where they come from, and just try to get the most solid, rugged, durable bikes we can find.
Give me a list of some of the countries. You mentioned Cambodia because you and your brother were there on this tour. Give me a list of some of the countries where kids are enjoying some of the bikes from 88 Bikes.
Sure. Yeah, we've worked in Cambodia, Peru, Uganda, Vietnam, Ghana, India, Nepal, and later this year we're going to be working in Mongolia, Tanzania, potentially Lesotho, and potentially the Navajo Nation in the Four Corners area of the American Southwest.
And what compelled you and your brother to go on the tour in the first place? I mean, what's your history with cycling?
Well, you know, biking has, I guess for you and a lot of your listeners as well, has always been kind of a way of really experiencing the world and enjoying life. Back in the 90s, we biked across America. That was actually my first film. My breakout documentary was about biking across America. So biking had always been this kind of transcendent thing for us. And as you know, we've discussed, both of us can remember our first bikes, and most people can as well. So we want to give kids that same happiness and freedom and autonomy that we felt when we were kids. And giving them a bike provides not only that, but also a way to get to school, a way to be happy and healthy, and in many cases safe.
How do you choose the kids who get the bikes? How do you choose the organizations from which you find these children?
We vet them very heavily. A lot of times, now anyway, organizations are coming to us. They've heard about us. I got a call from a Peace Corps volunteer in Mongolia actually a few months ago, and she was really excited about doing a project there. And we've been working with her, and she actually has some great connections and some great ideas, and it's probably going to happen. So in a lot of cases, they come to us. What we look for is an NGO in-country that's been working on the ground and has long-term relationships with a lot of these orphanages, or perhaps they run the orphanages themselves. We talk to them for a while. We do a lot of research. We make sure that, you know, everything's on the up and up and looking good. And then when we're comfortable and competent that these NGOs are going to work, we go in country and begin working with them in doing a bike endowment.
And now, do you personally give the bikes to the kids?
I haven't till this point. Yeah, I'm always there, and my brother is usually there as well. Jared, he's a doctor at the Mayo Clinic. We're getting so many bike donations these days. I think we've got like close to 700 bikes now we have to give away, that it's getting to the point where we're going to have to deputize a few folks to go out there and do it for us. But it's a real thrill to be there in country, to see the truck roll in, the kids go nuts, and you spend a few hours and typically a few days giving the bikes to the kids. You know, we talk to every child. We ask them what they want to be when they grow up. We have the workshops that help them get up to speed on bike repair and safety. So it's a long process, but it's a really fun process too. And we just love working with the kids and seeing their happiness.
You know, we have a charity here in Utah called Bikes for Kids Utah. And I had the opportunity to go, I think it was last year, when they were giving away hundreds of bikes to these kids, and just watch them walk away with a huge smile on their face, knowing that they've gotten this magical vehicle that will allow them a certain level of freedom that maybe they hadn't had before, or give them some joy that they hadn't had before. Now, and these are kids who live, you know, right here in the U.S. I've got to think that this can be a life-changing event for a lot of these kids to whom you give these bikes.
Oh, yeah. We send back volunteers, you know, months later to kind of assess things and help fix up the bikes and see how things are going. And some of the responses we've gotten from the kids, not only when we've given them the bikes, but in the months since, are really, really touching. I mean, one girl in Nepal talked about how bikes were the key to solving global warming and all the problems in the cities like Kathmandu and pollution and health. And, I mean, you hear these kids talking like this, and you really begin to think of bikes as exactly what they are, these transcendent vehicles of fun and health and happiness. And yes, so when you give a child a bike, pretty much anywhere in the world, I'm sure there's a few spots where they might not have the same amount of impact, but pretty much anywhere we give the kids bikes, they're really happy. They love them, they're one, that rare thing that's as useful as it is enjoyable. You know, it's something that transforms their lives and helps them to be happy and moves them forward as well.
Speaking of happy, you've got to be like one of the happiest guys in the world. What a great thing that you do every day.
Oh, thanks. You know, it's funny. It does kind of rub off on you, and which isn't to say that it's not a lot of work. We definitely have to work at it. You know, we spend a lot of time, like I mentioned, vetting these organizations. Traveling in the developing world is exciting, exhilarating, but it can be difficult as well. But yes, when you get a chance to see a child happy like this, to impact them, their lives in this way, and to kind of forge these long-term relationships with these orphanages and schools, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I've got to think so. Now, I found you, and I was connected to you through my sponsor, through Keen, and Keen apparently has been working with 88 Bikes for some time. Tell me about that and sort of what the connection and the synergy is between 88 Bikes and Keen.
Well, we love Keen. Keen has been a great sponsor of ours for years now. I originally met them back at Mountain Film a few years ago, and we became great friends. And I think we have a lot of shared values of, you know, experiencing life and living what Keen calls, of course, a hybrid life. That is, you know, finding time for all the different aspects of life, for work and for play, and integrating all those aspects into your life. And they've been wonderful partners for us, and we really appreciate their support.
Now, speaking of Mountain Film, that's where you were last weekend, and you told me that you had the opportunity, you were doing a book signing right near Greg Mortensen. I think everybody knows who he is and what he has done for the third world countries as far as education and things like that. But you told me you were signing a book, so I had no idea you were an author. Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah, the books I was signing was two books about travel and kind of making travel meaningful. The first book is a memoir about the bike journey across America that I also turned into a documentary that really really launched my career a few years ago, and I guess cemented my love for bicycling in a lot of ways, called True Fans. And then the second book is called The Road Trip Pilgrim's Guide, and it's a kind of a little anecdotal guidebook for meaningful travel. After True Fans came out, a lot of folks asked me, well, how can I make my trips as impactful and meaningful as yours evidently seem to be? And of course, I cut out all the boring stuff. You know, all the things where we're really, you know, really struggling. It just seems like this romp. But anyway, I wrote that book to kind of be a resource for folks to potentially gain some inspiration in terms of finding meaning in the travels and infusing their travel with meaning.
What's next for 88 Bikes? What's next for Dan Austin?
88 Bikes this year, we're doing our most ambitious project to date, our Villages project. And the whole idea behind Villages is to infuse these extremely rural areas in the world, these very remote areas, with bikes for all the kids. And to by so doing and so concentrating on one of these areas, really impact the culture of the region for good, and set up hub bike shops in each of these areas, where the kids can learn bike repair and apprenticeships and have classes and things. Like I mentioned, we're going to be going to Mongolia, potentially the Navajo Nation, Tanzania, potentially Lesotho. We're looking at a few other sites as well. And again, the idea is to get bikes into these remote regions where they can do a ton of good, where they can really empower the kids, and where you know, a lot of these kids have probably never biked before.
Well, when we're done this evening, I'm going to be donating a bike to one of your kids, and I'm going to, what you do is awesome, and I couldn't imagine not supporting you. So I just want to know, tell everybody how they can help 88 Bikes and how they can go about donating a bike to one of your kids.
Sure. Well, it's very simple. You go online, 88bikes.org, and you can donate a bike. It's $88. Pretty simple. We don't take salaries. It's all volunteer based. The money goes directly to the kids. We don't have an office space, and we keep all admin costs, like posters and cards and things, to a minimum. So your donation goes directly to the kids, and you can make that donation online. If you don't want to donate a bike, if that's a little bit out of your range, or you'd like to help us out in a different way, you can donate any amount, $10, $25, everything helps. And again, all that money goes directly to our projects as well, helping to train the kids in bike repair, take care of expenses on the ground while we're giving the bikes out, transporting the bikes, etc.
Do you ever take volunteers with you on any of these trips to help you with any of these tasks?
Well, you know, we have a burgeoning volunteer program. We have a volunteer right now, actually, in Nepal, doing a round of bike repair workshops with the kids over there. She's been awesome. sending back all kinds of updates and pictures. She's done an incredible job over there. So we typically what we do when folks want to volunteer is we see where they want to volunteer, where their interest lies, and then we try to place them in a country. We had another volunteer in Peru recently. Another guy, it looks like he's going to be heading over there soon. We have two other volunteers who are going to an ashram in India that we endowed earlier this year. They'll be going later this summer. One of them is going to probably set up an organic garden. So things start with bikes, but they kind of expand from there. And we try to honor the abilities of our volunteers and countries. So folks can definitely contact us and fill out an application, and it's very simple. It's nothing, no big deal, and get involved if they want to do that as well.
Well, Dan, I think that what you've done and what you're continuing to do is to be commended. It's a very compelling story, and I believe in what you're doing, and I hope that all of our listeners will get involved in some way, shape, or form. It's 88bikes.org. Dan Austin, thank you so much for being on the Fredcast.
Oh, thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks once again to Dan Austin for his time. I did donate my $88 to get a child a bicycle. I think it's a great thing. I hope that you will get involved as well. I want to thank the folks at Keen for putting me in touch with Dan, and I hope that you enjoyed that interview. Next up is an interview that I did about a week ago with Tyler Servaas. Tyler is one of the organizers of a new cycling event starting in Utah, moving to California, and then hopefully all across North America and beyond. It's called Rockwell Relay. Now, we're all familiar with events like Furnace Creek 508 and other ultra events around the country. Rockwell Relay takes that concept and, I believe, brings it to a more popular level, allowing those of us who may not necessarily be ultra endurance athletes to participate in those types of events. So here's my interview with Tyler Servaas from Rockwell Relay. Today, I'm really pleased to bring you an interview with Tyler Servaas. Tyler is from a group called the Rockwell Relay. Tyler, welcome to the Fredcast.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Tell everybody what the Rockwell Relay is all about.
You know, the Rockwell Relay really has its roots in what we've seen, the growth of running relays, the popularity of events like the Hood to Coast. Locally in Utah here, the Wasatch Back Running Relay. Just kind of a rolling party where people can get together and get involved in an endurance sporting event and really have a good time doing it.
Okay, so most people don't think about endurance and good time in the same sentence. So why don't you explain, because, you know, I'm pretty familiar with the Wasatch Back Relay. I've actually got a friend who's very, very involved in the organization that puts that on, the Ragnar Relay. And so I'm familiar what you mean when you say a rolling party, but take people through it. What does that mean, endurance and good time?
You know, the Rockwell Relay, our road event, is 516 miles. So it's a straight on through 24 to 36 hour event, depending on what your team composition is like. So every team has a support vehicle that's following them and then a rider on the road. So you've got a rider who's out there doing their leg and you're leapfrogging and cheering that rider on, but in the car, you're eating junk food and you're trying to recover from your leg and get ready for the next leg. And you're just having a good time, that camaraderie with your teammates. It's like a road trip and a bike race combined.
So, without the togas though, I guess.
Yeah.
so if, over 500 miles and there's a team involved, how many people are on a team?
Well, our event is 4-person teams. So it can be, we have several different compositions and classes. It can be all men, all women, mixed.
And so, whereas a lot of these running events, it's maybe a dozen people on the team. So you've got 4 people on your team, and now you start talking about classes of men, women. It almost sounds like this is a race. Is this a race?
You know, it really is a race. We have not gone the route of being sanctioned by the national governing body, but it's more in the category of perhaps a Grand Fondo, where it's a timed event. Some people really take it very seriously. Other teams just want to be able to say they've covered that distance and have that prestige of finishing the event.
So, you know, as I think you know, I originally come from Southern California, and out there, of course, you know, there's the Furnace Creek 508, and that is a serious racing event. And a lot of people think, wow, if I can do Furnace Creek, you know, I've really made it as an endurance racer. But here, you're probably going to have people who are in that class who want to do sort of a Furnace Creek 508 kind of relay. But then you're going to get guys like me who just want to go out, do this with three of my friends and just say, hey, we did a relay of 500 miles, right?
Exactly. And, you know, it's a first year event, and I really have a background in competitive road racing. I've been racing for 20 years, and we really wanted to bring an event where, you know, people of a variety of fitness levels could tackle the event and be able to, you know, to be able to say that they've done it. We've got a lot of prestige around finishing the race, and we want it to be something where people, you know, it's kind of a status symbol in a way to be able to complete the race, complete the distance, and say you've done it.
So let's talk about how this works then. So, you know, 516 miles, I divide that by four. That's about 130 miles a piece. Does that mean that my legs are going to be 130 miles a piece?
No, the legs are broken up. So each leg is set to be an average about 45 miles. So the way it works is you'll jump on your bike, and each cyclist has designated legs that they'll select before the race event. So they go through in sequence. So you'll do your leg, then you jump in the car, and you have 4 to 6 hours to 8 hours, depending on how quickly your teammates complete their legs before you get back out on the bike and go again. And you'll do three legs in total. So that's where you get about the 130 miles.
Okay, that makes total sense. Now, you said it's a first year event. Where is your first event?
Our first event is from the mountain bike Mecca of the West, from Moab, Utah. It finishes up in St. George, Utah, down on the border of Utah and Arizona.
And you call it a mountain biking Mecca, but if anybody's listened to the Fredcast, they know that I've done some road riding there, and there's some pretty awesome road riding there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's incredible road riding. And the way we have our course set up, we pass through several national parks. We pass through Cap Reef National Monument. We passed through Bryce Canyon, Cedar Breaks Monument, just some beautiful, beautiful areas from the Red Rock to the high alpine climbs. We have two passes where we cross over the 10,000 foot mark.
Wow. Really? That sounds exciting. When is your Moab to St. George race?
The race kicks off June 11th, 2010. We have an 8 a.m. start from Moab, and then it will wrap up. We're going to close the finish line at 8 p.m. on the 12th.
And
in St. George, Utah.
Now, you mentioned a support vehicle, and I'm guessing that you've probably got some requirements when it comes to the support vehicle and the kind of equipment that they might have to have, and also maybe the kind of equipment that the cyclists need to have. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the support vehicle, you know, we figure the bigger the better. I mean, you can accomplish the event in a sedan, but it's great if you can take a bigger vehicle like a Suburban or a van where riders can stretch out in between legs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have quite a bit of crew out on the course to be able to sweep and help with minor mechanicals. But we do encourage the riders to have like a seat bag and a CO2, perhaps a mini pump, for those emergencies. So again, it's more along the lines of a self-supported ride where you have the team supporting you. But if you get in a pickle, you really want to have a little bit of equipment to take care of that.
And since you're starting off at night, I'm guessing lights are definitely a requirement.
Yeah, definitely. We will be starting at 8 a.m. And riding through the night. But once we hit the nighttime hours, we have some requirements in our race rules and race Bible where we require the rider to have reflective clothing and head and tail lights for safety.
Okay. Now, you're doing this first one in southern Utah. Any plans to do Rockwell relays in other locations?
Definitely. We really are building a promotion, we're building really a series of events. So we're looking closely at a Southern California event right now. along the PCH area, and that would be in the spring of 2011. And then we also have a mountain bike relay in the works right now for northern Utah.
Wow, that would be great. So I got to ask you, though, because I'm intrigued by the name. Why Rockwell Relay?
We selected Rockwell Relay. We have a close relationship with a watch company called Rockwell Time. Rockwell Time has had a very big presence in a lot of action sports, like skateboarding, wakeboarding, supercross, super bike racing, and they really they're passionate about endurance racing, and it's amazing how many motocross and supercross riders do majority of their training on the road. So there's a good affinity between that brand and endurance sports, and they really want to step into road and mountain bike events.
Great. Now, you know, you mentioned that you've been racing for about 20 years. I'm curious, have you done a relay like this before personally? Is this something that has been a passion of yours?
You know, I have not so much done a relay. I've done long distance events. I'm a big fan of the Logan to Jackson race here in Utah. I've done that a number of times, and we really see the growing market for this type of event, where you can cover a lot of distance, but you don't have to be super fit. That Logan to Jackson race, Loderja, that I mentioned there, they use their relay event as really a way for people to kind of get their feet wet before they go out and do a full solo 200-mile race.
So this is a way for people to be able, as you said at the top, a way for people to be able to say, look, I did a 500-mile race. The fact of the matter is you did it in shorter legs that are sort of bite-sized chunks that make it a lot easier to tackle.
Exactly. And it doesn't require such a heavy training load or training commitment to prepare for an event like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you could go out and ride 45, 50 miles at a pop and recover and do it again, wash, rinse, and repeat.
All right. Let everybody know again where they can find your website, Twitter, Facebook, how they can get more information about the Rockwell Relay.
Yeah, the best way is to go to our website, which is rockwellrelay.com. We have buttons there to follow us on Facebook or become a fan of ours on Facebook and also our Twitter feeds.
Excellent. All right. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for joining us here on the Fredcast. I got to tell you, this is an event that I would love to participate in, and I hope that a lot of our Fredcast listeners decide to sign up. It's www.rockwellrelay.com. Good luck with your first event. I'm looking forward to seeing many more of these across the country.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having us.
Well, that was Tyler Servas from the Rockwell Relay. I think this is going to be a great event. I wish I was going to be in town for that St. George Relay. If any of you in the Fredcast audience are planning on doing it and you'd like to report back in the next couple of weeks on your and your team's experience in the Rockwell Relay, please let me know. And of course, I'll be looking forward to the one in California in 2011. Maybe we can put together a Fredcast team for that one. And finally tonight, you may recall a couple of weeks ago that I let you all in on what I thought was a secret, but one that needed to get out, and that was about the Gazzetta dello Sport application so that those of us who had iPhones would be able to watch the Giro over Wi-Fi or 3G on our iPhones. And yes, I did look for Android and BlackBerry apps, and I didn't find any. Well, I was reviewing some email, and I got an email from a listener who told me that Eurosport in the UK also had an app, and that through that app, you could buy subscriptions that would allow you to watch the Tour of California, the Giro d'Italia, and yes, the upcoming Tour de France. I tried to buy it through the UK iTunes store, but since I'm registered here in the United States, they said, sorry, chap, no. So I did the next best thing. I contacted our friend Carlton Reed from bikebiz.com and quickrelease.tv. He downloaded the app, gave it a try, and here are his thoughts about the Eurosport Player application.
Thanks for the tip-off, David. I went and downloaded the Eurosport player for the iPhone. It's a free download, but you do actually have to pay like an in-app purchase if you want to actually watch the TV, which is kind of daft, I suppose, in one way, in that it's a free app, but there's nothing you can do with the app. But what happens is when you go into the app for the first time and you start to try and play whatever you're trying to get, then it asks you, do you want to go for a monthly subscription or an annual one? So clearly you can then decide whether it's going to be worth it for the year or just pick a month. So I'm picking this month because I'm getting both Tour of California and the Giro, both of which look a bit wet at the moment, well, they were yesterday anyway. And I'll probably pay another monthly subscription for getting the in-app purchase for July so I can watch the Tour de France. Now, I've got to say, I can actually watch British Eurosport on my own telly, but this will be really good for those situations where I'm on a train or I'm away from home and I can't get to my normal satellite telly. I can just fire up my iPhone and I can have a listen and a watch on this app. It costs £2.39 for a month, which, according to XE.com, is $3.45. So, moving the decimal point, that gives you nearly £24 for a year subscription, or $34.50 for an annual, which, to tell the truth, isn't bad, I don't think. But for the monthly subscription, that's just stunning. Now, I've tried it on 3G, and it's a bit more spluttery, as you'd expect, so Wi-Fi is definitely the best way to go. But it does work on 3G, so I really can be sitting on a train and watching the Tour of California, or watching the Giro this month, or in July, watching the Tour de France. So, perfect picture quality, perfect sound. So, highly recommended.
And if it's highly recommended by Carlton Reed, then I'm going to say it's a pretty good app. I'm just bummed that the only place that this appears to work is in the UK. But for those of you who are UK listeners, and I know there's a lot of you out there, this sounds like a great purchase for the Tour de France in July. Thanks so much, Carlton, for that information. There are links in the show notes to Carlton's websites, as well as to where you can find this app in the UK iTunes store. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Before we go, just a couple of things. Number one, I want to thank this show's sponsor, Keen Footwear. We talked to you about the hybrid life and hybrid care, and you got to hear from 88 Bikes. Keen is doing a lot of good stuff, not just for your feet, but also for humanity in general. For more information, go to www.thefredcast.com and click on the Keen link, and we thank Keen so much for their support. I also want to thank the features sponsor today, and that is Jensen USA. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast for more information and to check out that great Enjoy the Ride banner. Thanks to Jensen USA for supporting the Fredcast. For show notes, links, blog posts, and yes, a number of recent videos and photo galleries, please check out our website at www.thefredcast.com. If you'd like to send us an email, please do so anytime. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to send a voice message just for me or for one that you'd like played on the show, give a call to our voicemail hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. And don't forget, you can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Fredcast, or on Facebook. And once again, links are on the website. And with those housekeeping matters out of the way, it is time for the way that we close the show every week, and that is with PodSafe Cycling Music. This week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling, available at www.cadencerevolution.com. Tonight's music comes to us from the Telepathic Butterflies, and the song is called Cheerleader. Thank you so much for listening to this long episode of the Fredcast. Thank you so much for staying subscribed, for telling your friends about the show, for writing reviews and on iTunes and writing comments on the blog, for all of that. You are very much appreciated. This is David Bernstein, the host and producer of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. We'll talk to you all again in just a couple of days. But between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.